Hi, I'm Grant Irvin, the Chief Resilience Officer for the City of Pittsburgh, and welcome to the Grant Street Experience. This is an experimental podcast that we're developing here at the City of Pittsburgh to help collect some of the unique characters that work here with us on Grant Street. So kind of the confluence of activities and innovation and just general interesting folks that we meet every day working here in local government in the great city of Pittsburgh. I'm here with my first guest, Rebecca Kiernan, Principal Resilience Planner. Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you, Grant. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate it. So the kind of the gist of this program is about we see interesting people every day working in the city, and the idea was to effectively share that with the public. So some of the interesting things people do, see, say, meetings that we have a lot of folks like to meet here in local government.
It's a lot of meetings. A
lot of meetings. So we wanted to capture that for posterity's sake and the opportunity to share that with the residents, some of the interesting things that we see. So it's a little bit West Wing, a little bit Parks and Rec, a little bit Spin City, I think is what we're looking at here, okay. To kind of share these little aspects with us. So I figured you'd be our first guest because we get to meet all these people kind of in the work that we do. So
thanks. I'm honored.
You're honored. Well, the honor is mine. You know, maybe just to start off, your story and how you traveled to the city of Pittsburgh, maybe could you share with folks kind of how you got here?
This morning or
Yeah, let's
generally?
Start with this morning, actually.
Well, typically I ride my bicycle.
Okay.
So I take the Eliza Furnace Trail and I make it to Grant Street, which is a pretty nice ride. But today I had to get a special ride because I had some baggage with me, this lovely velvet unicorn, which I felt would make a really nice set prop for you.
All right.
For your first podcast.
Thank you, I guess.
As you are the city's Chief Resilience Officer unicorn, I thought it was fitting.
I appreciate that. So, you know, the first question that comes to my mind, I mean, it's obviously it's beautiful. So where does one person, you know, find a piece of art like that?
Actually, I found it at the Habitat for Humanity Restore. If you've never been, you should go.
Where is that located at?
Terrific place. It is in Edgewood, so not in the city.
Okay.
Is that Edgewood, Swissvale?
Edgewood, Swissvale. All right.
That general vicinity.
I mean, is this like a 1960s, 70s, kind of like the Velvet Elvis type of...
I think so.
So this was like a thing.
So it's like a black and gold unicorn, gold leaf, black okay. velvet. Good set prop.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm stunned. I'm stunned by that. I mean, so like, did you have any trouble bringing it in?
No.
Just like stowed it in on your backpack and.
Yeah. It got through security.
It got through security.
No one questioned it.
All right, that's a pretty good start. That's a pretty good start. Well, it'll give us something to talk about here into the future, I guess.
I mean, I think it sets a precedent, too, for your future guests to have to one-up the velvet unicorn.
I mean, how do you one-up a velvet unicorn?
I don't know.
I mean, that's like a big, that's a big thing there. So you travel on bike every day. You're a bike commuter.
That's right.
You know, one of the things that always... I find interesting with that is you always have some like pretty good stories about bike commuting.
Of the trail stories.
The trail stories. Like that might be like a whole podcast, like Pittsburgh trail stories.
It could be.
But you've had a couple encounters, right?
I've had a few encounters with bunnies.
Bunnies?
One with a deer that was pretty intense.
What happened with that?
So as you might know, the city has a pretty serious deer overpopulation issue.
It's a big problem, right?
So I just learned recently that I think in 2010, there was a deer count study that was done.
Okay.
And in, I believe it's Riverview Park, there's 82 deer per square mile.
82?
10 years ago.
Hold on, there's 82 deer 10 years ago.
Per square mile.
Per square mile.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is an enormous amount of deer.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know. I guess I don't know what our population density is, but that's a good factoid to look up.
Like deer or people?
People.
Is there more deer?
What's the deer to people ratio?
The deer to people ratio in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. So the study was done in multiple parks across the city.
Yeah.
And in one of our parks, we have 82 deer per square mile back in 2010. And they've still been left unmanaged. Anyway, this is a long-winded way of saying we have a lot of deer in the city.
All right.
So one night I was biking home with my headlight on, which is pretty bright.
Okay.
And then another bicycle was coming towards me. This is all on the Eliza Furnace Trail. And the in between the two lights blinking.
So, like, where on the trail? Is this closer to town or, like, closer to Hazelwood?
In the middle.
In the middle, okay.
It was, like, right smack in the middle.
All right.
And so as I'm moving towards this other cyclist who is coming towards me, it's dark out. All of a sudden, there's a deer, like a literal deer in headlights. And the deer cocks its head. And if you know the Eliza Furnace yeah. Trail, it's sandwiched in between 2nd Avenue and 376.
Right.
And so the deer kind of like turns its head, freezes, jumps over the railing into 376.
What?
And accordions a car.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
And you watched all
Trail
this?
Danger. I watched it. I was on the phone with my dad, and he was like, what is going on? I'm screaming, yelling.
What did your dad do?
He's like, what? What is going on? I thought you were biking.
So the deer gets crunched.
The deer got crunched.
Do you get off your bike? Do you do anything? Do you call, like, what happens next?
No, I mean...
You shrug your shoulders.
Yeah, I guess.
Saddle back up.
I mean, everybody stopped, and you know, you can't really get over like the fence or anything.
Yeah, there's not much you could really do.
Yeah, there
right?
wasn't really anything to do. But
so
anyway, that's indicative of our deer problem.
Yeah.
Like I've also recently learned, because we're doing a little bit of an analysis, that deer Pennsylvania, I think, is one of the highest states for deer accidents, vehicle collisions.
Because of the overpopulation issue?
Because of the population. And Allegheny County, specifically, like, our vicinity here is, like, the highest in Pennsylvania. So,
really?
Like, we have a real, there's a lot of deer.
There's a lot of deer.
Yeah.
So the, you know, just go back to that 2nd Avenue incident. So, like, was anybody, like, the car, did they keep driving, or...
I don't think so.
You don't know. You were like, I'm out of here. Like,
yeah.
This is too intense.
Well, it was dark, and you know, 376 is up a little bit, so there's
right.
like a fence. Like, I can't jump like a deer jumps.
Yeah.
So you know, you figure the motorists are gonna. I was kind of stunned and didn't know what to do.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's crazy. And then you had a more recent incident too, right? Not with deer, but something with more
well, bunnies
something more
are
vicious,
like,
right?
Bunnies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the bunnies are always kind of hopping out.
Like the sharp teeth. Like
yeah.
the fangs.
Yeah. They get right in front of your tire.
So what happened with the bunny? Did you hit the bunny? Did the bunny
almost.
Hop over?
No, I almost hit the bunny, but.
But you say it's.
He was okay.
He was okay.
Swerve. Yeah.
All right.
I have a picture, so maybe we can follow up with the photo.
Okay.
But one time last year, I was biking to work, and there was a bunny rabbit. It's a little gruesome, so
just let kids know.
People.
All right. Parents might want to.
So there was a
fast forward
bunny
this.
Rabbit with like it was hanging from a tree by like its head.
What?
And then like the neck was kind of
this is on the trail.
It's a really gruesome, weird, yeah, in a tree. And I was like, are there, I was trying to, it was up there for a long time. And so I posted it on social media and asked, you know, like,
what do you do,
what do you think this, like,
yeah,
is this, you know, some kind of satanic
foul play
ritual
or yeah.
like, what could this be? But people surmise that it might have been like a hawk that got the bunny
yeah.
and then dropped it into the tree, and then it was hanging from the tree that way.
Like the hawk lost its grip.
Possibly.
And then
yeah.
went home hungry.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know, but it was up there for a long time. I have a picture. I can follow up with a photo. I don't know if we can add it in.
Yeah, we'll talk to Dave and the team and see what we could do with that. Now do you...
Trail drama. Yeah.
I mean, this is like Tales of the Trail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is like serious stuff.
Bike commuting in the city is pretty fun. My last job was in Moon, so I had to drive every day.
So this is like a big, like, yeah, talk about that. I mean, this is like a big improvement in terms of like working at the city, living in the Run, which is where, you know, your neighborhood.
Yep.
Like
Proud Run resident.
Yep. So like your commute is...
Terrific. Yeah, it's great. So I used to be I was a car commuter for a brief period of time.
Okay.
And that is just a grind. I mean, you know, the reverse traffic out to the airport is just as bad as the traffic from the airport coming.
So you'd go out like through the tunnels, 376, out the moon.
I mean, like, just to get a sense of how sad and grinding that commute is, there were multiple instances where I would see people just bawling in their car, like on the way.
Like you're on Green Tree Hill and people are just like,
yeah. Super sad.
Super, like, on the way to work or on the way home from work?
No, on the way to.
To work.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But bike commuting, there's a whole bunch of people that I say good morning to. Yeah. DPW workers are out there sweeping. You say good morning.
It's just a friendly kind of experience.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So it's like you get some human interaction before you get to work.
And then do you also kind of clear your head a little bit too?
Yeah.
I mean, because you're getting some exercise at the same time.
Yep. Yeah, prep yourself for the day.
Prep yourself for the day, you know. So was that one of the big kind of determining factors for you? I mean, like when you came to the city, like, so you saw this job for, I think it was a resilience planner or whatever it was at the time. Cool title, right?
Yeah, it's cool.
But like ultimately, was that one of the biggest factors, like just changing your commuting habits?
Yeah, I mean, that's a major benefit for sure. When I first moved to the run, I moved to the run thinking, oh, hey, this is really cool. It's right by the bike trail. Maybe someday I'll get a job downtown. So that was kind of a factor of moving to the run.
So you were thinking ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking ahead a little bit.
Okay.
What attracted me to this job? I was really into climate adaptation. I kind of went back to grad school for that.
Talk a little bit about what that is for folks.
So adapting, the idea is that in a changing climate that we're currently seeing,
right,
you need to adapt your systems, your ecology, your infrastructure, everything to that changing climate. So I was really interested in that and kind of focused on that in grad school.
Okay.
With the intention of, you know, getting into that field. So I was a sustainability coordinator, but then kind of jumped on this opportunity when it came up, because it kind of made sense.
Kind of from a
job title made sense.
Job title made sense in terms of like your interest areas and everything. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember you had a kind of an interesting story. You knew I was going to have to ask this. You had an interesting story before you started here, because you had a job that you had to do right between leaving Moon and starting at the city. You had kind of a Smokey and the Bandit type of moment, I think.
Was delivering a vehicle across country.
Yeah, yeah.
So one time back in 2015, I was paid twice to deliver vehicles across the country. Once to Seattle, and then another time to Montana.
To Montana.
Yeah.
So these are like ultimate Western road trips.
It was great. I had a coworker that was trying to move to Seattle, and she was complaining in the office one day about how expensive it is to ship a car.
Okay.
And I was like, well, I would just drive it for you.
Okay.
And so
you're like
I
that
just
good
drove
of a friend.
It.
You're like, hey, I'll drive. Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah. So epic road trip. Went through the Badlands. It was cool.
Was that the highlight? Like South Dakota, North Dakota?
Yeah, we saw some longhorn sheep.
Okay.
So that was kind of neat, like just a herd of them hanging out. So that was kind of epic.
Now, it's probably like, do you have a soundtrack that you develop, or like road trips always like necessitate like listening to music, particularly like long road trips?
I'm like a radio girl.
Really?
So I kind of like listening to the different radio stations, like when you get into new areas.
Okay.
Was it Wyoming? I think it was Wyoming, but there was like one memorable moment where I was in one of those Western states and like a rhinestone cowboy came on the radio. And that's like
wind the windows down.
Yeah.
Singing at the top of your lungs.
And that wouldn't have been on my playlist.
Rhinestone
now
cowboy?
Maybe it would.
Now
be,
maybe.
But it wouldn't have been.
No, like
at the moment.
Radio's kind of changed a lot, right? So you have Clear Channel and all these kind of homogeneous stations. Like when you drive across country now, is it the same stuff like from Indiana to Ohio?
I still think
Indiana?
It's a little different.
Is it?
I mean, there's like the Clear Channel stations, but even those Clear Channel stations, I think, play to like the flavor of the location.
So like you might get something different in the Midwest versus the Mountain West?
So like in Pittsburgh, yeah, and nothing wrong with Pittsburgh, but there is an exorbitant amount of Journey on the radio. Def Leppard and Journey. I don't know why that is.
David's shaking his head.
I like Journey.
So like Journey, Def Leppard.
That's not everywhere.
That's not everywhere?
No, it's not.
Really?
Yeah, no, it's not. Not at all.
Journey's Greatest Hits is like one of the best albums of all time.
Oh, I agree.
Thumbs up from the crew.
Yeah, I'm a Journey fan, but...
Because you're in Pittsburgh, or were you a Journey fan before?
I was a Journey fan before, but I find myself like not really that able to listen to Journey all that much because it's always on the radio.
It's always on the radio.
So like, I wouldn't put on a Journey album.
So, I mean, you didn't spend extended time there, but like if you're in the Badlands, for example, like... Is there another type of 80s rock that is...
Rhinestone Cowboy.
Rhinestone Cowboy.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there's different flavors everywhere.
Different flavors everywhere you go. So you start here at the City back in 15.
Yeah, that sounds
I think
right.
I was about right.
The end of 2015.
We had this really pretty interesting project with the Rockefeller Foundation and the 100 Resilient Cities program. You know, we got to meet a lot of different people and do a lot of different projects with that. And one of the things you did was you oversaw the platform partnership. So like all these companies and agencies that are trying to help cities. Was there anything that like really stuck out for you, like a project wise? It was like, whoa, this was like eye opening and where you really learned something or.
You know, they were all really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe for folks, talk a little bit about what this is. I'm not doing a great job explaining it. But.
So through this program, we had access to these technical resources from companies. So like we worked with Microsoft, for example, but then also like smaller entities and startups. And we worked with Arcadis, a local Arcadis team on stormwater management. And we developed a little pamphlet toolkit on how to better work interagency wise on our stormwater issues.
Okay.
So that was one project. We worked with the FRED model, which I'm not going to be able to. Something about epidemiological. Okay. Comes out of Pitt. It's a model that they use to
Graduate School of Public Health,
Pitt,
right?
Yeah, thank you. Pitt Graduate School of Public Health. And a company called Intermedics partnered together to do a workshop for us with our emergency management folks and some other regional partners to model an air quality event.
Okay.
So what the FRED model does, which is developed by Pitt, Graduate School of Public Health, is they typically use it for measles to figure out where the measles outbreaks will be if you don't, if there's, you know, not a critical mass of vaccinations. I'm probably not explaining this perfectly. Maybe we could.
It's basically like looking at what they call contagion, like the spread of infectious disease.
Yeah. So we adapted that model for an air quality event similar to like the Donora smog event, if you know about the Donora smog event from the 1940s.
Okay.
It
was like 46, 47.
I think so.
Yeah.
Where a significant amount of people actually died due to an inversion event, which had the pollution from, I think it was a zinc smelter next door.
Okay. What's an inversion?
So an inversion event is something that happens here in Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, because of our topography.
Okay.
And so because we're kind of in a bowl, you know, there's hillsides around, in an inversion event, it's when the temperature rises suddenly and the hot air traps the cooler air down below. So like in the morning, typically this will happen.
Okay.
It seems like in my estimation. The warm air traps the cold air down below, and then the pollution also gets trapped in there.
Okay.
So when you have, industry that's still working and cranking out, emissions.
Sure.
That all of that pollution settles down below
trapped.
Where the people live, right? It gets trapped. And so one of those events occurred in Donora, which is on the outskirts of the city.
It's about 40 miles south of Pittsburgh in Washington County.
And actually some people lost their lives Wow. So that was kind of the beginning.
Because of ingesting the pollution.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then I believe a lot of people died after the effect too from, you know, cancers and other, longer term issues.
So you took that kind of incident.
Yes. So,
and then fast forward.
So we took that kind of an incident. Then, Pitt also had, and I'm trying to remember exactly what happens. This is like 3 or 4 years ago.
We're testing your memory. That's good.
Yeah, thanks. And so what Pitt had was data that kind of started to locate where people might have asthma issues or other respiratory issues throughout the city. It was kind of evenly dispersed, so it's not like at the actual households. But so they were able to model where the phone calls were coming in for people having, you know, 911 calls
right.
coming in for people having respiratory issues that needed, you know, to be transported by ambulance somewhere.
Okay.
And then this company, Intermedics, was able to start modeling the, you know, number of beds that the hospitals have that they might be running out of. The roads might get clogged, for ambulance staff, cause people are trying to exit the city.
It was like a predictive analytics.
Yeah. So they're able to kind of model what the impact would be from a Denora style event in today's scenario with today's, you know, health outcomes.
Wow.
Which was pretty terrifying.
And as I remember, like, there was kind of like a, not a pushback where they're like, well, this isn't what the city or the system's made for. And, you know, we're looking at like the spread of influenza or Ebola mm-hmm. or other types of, so this was like kind of a different scenario that you presented to them.
Mm-hmm.
And what were some of the results in terms of kind of that modeling exercise?
Well, I mean, we had our emergency management staff was there, you know, the fire chief was there. So uh-huh. It was kind of more of like a thought exercise for our folks to be able to understand, hey, this actually is a threat. And this is the impact that something like this would have on our city. We also had some local, you know, air quality activists too, who like understood the situation and
the technical aspects of things. And
so I think it's, you know, it's a good thought experiment. Like this actually could happen today. Like,
right.
That's why you need, you know, government and responses and,
everybody on the same page.
Right. And to understand the threats.
One of the things I thought was kind of interesting about that though, was it was the folks in the public health agencies and the emergency management agencies aren't typically mm-hmm. connected in a preemptive way, right? So they're coming together when there is something serious, right? And just like building those human relationships between people, I thought was one of the, you know, here's a technology and a synthetic population model, but it was actually like some of those human connections that we were able to start to build with folks that, you know, changing business cards and things like that, that was really strong.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That
do you,
definitely happened.
Do you see, I mean, a lot of stuff that, you know, you kind of get involved with is like long-term, like thinking about climate change, thinking about adaptation. But what are some of like those near-term exercises that are really kind of the most positive things that you've been able to build?
Well, another project that we worked on was the Microsoft cybersecurity exercise too.
Yeah.
And that was pretty fascinating. But I mean, there's been City of Baltimore just went through a pretty serious cybersecurity incident where a lot of their city government was shut down for
right.
a while. So we were able to bring in Microsoft. They gave us a scenario of, you know, an escalating series of events. I think back at that time there was a whole clown issue that was going on.
It was a convention or something, clown convention?
No, it was like across the country there were like people in clown masks that were up to something weird. So
okay.
they kind of modeled the scenario after like, you have this influx of
clowns
for some reason. And then, what was the other, there was like a parade and a snowstorm. And so you start to see how, you know, your emergency management is a little bit stressed. And then, you know, you're not really paying attention to what's going on because there's all these other external events that are happening.
Right.
And then all of a sudden there's like a cybersecurity incident. So, you know, they go through like the whole time frame of like what's going on. And then the cybersecurity incident hacked in this theory, hacked into like our heating and cooling system.
Okay.
And I think the issue was they like bumped up the heat and were trying to like blow up the city county building.
It was like a gas leak infusion.
Through like the smart, you know, the new smart technology.
Okay.
And so Microsoft actually had incidences like that that they've intercepted. So they were kind of basing some of it on fact. But we had, you know, a lot of our IT department that was there, and it was just, you know, another kind of interesting scenario, mm-hmm. thought exercise on cybersecurity.
What's kind of fascinating for me about those two is that they end up yielding a lot of quick direct outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like that one in particular, like all of a sudden then we're starting to hire security engineers,
right.
And we're segregating kind of the IT pipelines for the energy intelligence network and things like that. So all of a sudden you're learning quick lessons that you can apply readily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think that that's kind of like going to be the nature of kind of planning in the future, is because things are constantly changing at such a quick rate and speed? I don't know if you could talk to that, like the things that you're thinking about, like take adaptation, for example, right? Like, so 3 years ago, we didn't have the amount of precipitation that we have mm-hmm. today. I mean, what are some of those things we're seeing there?
I mean, we have unprecedented landslides that we're now cleaning up. So, I mean, yeah, there's just a lot of weather events, and they're getting microbursts seem to be becoming more prevalent.
Uh-huh.
There's a really cool mapping blog that someone named Tom Petroni has done.
Yeah.
That kind of maps what those clouds look like, which is super fascinating.
Tom would be a good guest.
He would be a good guest.
Yeah.
But you need the visuals too.
Right.
But there was that microburst that happened in Lawrenceville recently. I think it was in late 2018, early 2019.
Sounds about right.
But he actually, like through his mapping exercise, you can see it on the radar coming in. And it's like, you know, that big red wall of like a storm cloud that's coming in. And so when you start to model these things and keep track of them, you can see that there are, you know, some patterns that are forming. Like, we're having more of those events. Well, why is that?
It's, right.
You know, the changing climate. Well, now how do we prepare for it? So I think a lot of the stuff is just like new territory that nobody really knows how to deal with yet. But I think the more we can track it and figure out what we're seeing in terms of our own impacts, we can start to adapt and, you know, try to figure out how to get ahead of
things.
It. Yeah.
We had a meeting the other day that with was it Tim Nuttall, the local ecologist.
Yeah, he would be a good guest too.
The thing that totally blew me away, maybe you can just tell listeners about, is worms.
Oh yeah, the worm story.
I growing up here, I never knew this. Like I was like, you know, you see a lot of stuff here, right? And uh-huh. So it takes you a bit to be moved and like, oh, whoa, that's something new. Like worms, who knew?
So worms are not native to the area.
Yeah.
I didn't really know this either. And so they came in, there's something about the ice age and the glaciers, and they've moved up from the south, but they're everywhere because people use them in their gardens.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen worm casings, it's like the worm poop that you add to your garden, and it's all because the worms eat it up, and it's like loose soil.
Okay.
Right? You've seen that in like potting soil, like,
yeah.
In people's gardens. So what's happening is in some of our parks, and this is contributing to our landslide problem, you have worms, a ton of worms that are coming in. This goes back to the deer problem that we have. So
it's all about deer.
Particularly in Riverview Park, where we have those 82 deer per square mile.
You know, my uncle was an avid deer hunter, and he moved to Florida.
He should come back.
I might be part of the problem.
We need
like
him.
He shouldn't have retired and moved to Florida. He should have stayed here.
Right. So the worms, the theory that's been discovered is that the worms are actually attracted to the deer poop. They eat the deer poop, and then so you end up with more worms in that location, which then breaks down all the soil, and then all of that soil is just washing away.
Wow.
With our heavier rains. So there's an ecosystem balance, right, between like worms and deer and other species and flora and fauna.
Right.
And when those systems start to get out of whack, you have what I believe Tim termed ecosystem meltdown.
Yeah.
Which that was a new term.
That was a new term for me too. So like basically like the region's ecology is changing because like in the deer's case, there's a lack of predators effectively.
Yeah. So we don't have any, there are no predators.
There are no predators.
I guess there used to be, you know, coyotes. My uncle's in Florida. Or hunters, there used to be.
There's coyotes in Morningside.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you seen them?
There was a picture the other day on next door Morningside. So I live in Morningside, right? And first everybody's like, oh, it's a dog, you know, it's no. And somebody who is in the know, we were right next to the zoo. So there's, you know, some of the folks that work at the zoo are like, oh no, that's a coyote. And there's a, I guess we call it a herd. Is that the right?
Oh, wow.
Well, like, no. Excuse me. A herd of deer.
Is that deer.
Is that the right terminology?
I think so.
In Stanton Heights, there's a huge, we'll call it a herd up there. And that's where the coyote sighting was.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know.
So maybe the predators are back.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it's like, you know, like introducing the wolves back to Yellowstone. Is this like introducing the coyotes back to Pittsburgh? Like, I don't know. But go back to the Riverview Park situation, though. So, like, what, talk about, like, what happened, though. Like, with the soil, and you're a big dirt buff, right?
Like, I like dirt.
You like dirt.
And worms.
So, like, he was showing that video that just, the soil was basically cascading down the hillside. And, like, and that was because of the worms, or?
Yeah, so the worms come in, and, you know, if you've been to a park, you know that you can, you know, you walk on the ground. You can't just scoop it up like a bowl of sprinkles, right?
Right.
But in this scenario, when you get enough worms into the system, and the video that he shows is just, you know, you pick up a handful of dirt, and you got four worms in there.
Right.
And so those worms then start to, you know, eat the leaf litter and all the dirt, the soil and the dirt that's underneath.
Okay.
And then they just break it up to the point where it's like a bowl of sprinkles. And so when a big rain comes in, it just flushes all that
washes
soil
it away.
Yeah. And then it's hard for, you know, anything to grow there, or stay there.
And the thing that was kind of interesting too, I mean, like the picture, like when you walk through the woods and you know, you pick up some leaves, there's wet leaves and there's like really a rich black dirt, you know, kind of the compost underneath that. Mm-hmm. That didn't exist there.
No. Yeah, it's a really big problem.
So then that whole kind of cycle is being disrupted.
Yep.
By deer, by worms.
Right.
So in an instance like that, like what do you do for the worms?
Well, I have a proposal.
Okay.
So you could repurpose my position to be the chicken flock keeper.
The chicken flock keeper? This is like something we have to.
Yeah, you get a flock of chickens, bring them in.
This is like a 2021 budget proposal. Yeah. Like chicken keeper.
We need some goats and we need some chickens.
Goats and chickens. Well, I've heard a lot about the goats, but like the eco goat thing, uh-huh. Like that's really popular.
Yeah, that's a real thing. It's better than lawnmowers.
So chickens, like you would have like a flock of chickens.
I don't know. This is just.
I mean, you're just speculating.
Yeah,
here, right?
I'm just, you know.
But like, so the chickens eat the worms.
My chickens eat worms. So, you know, I've let them out in my yard and I have a ton of worms in my yard and I like the worms there, but I've watched them chug worms in my backyard.
In your backyard.
Chug them.
Now, why do you have a lot of worms in your backyard? Like.
Because I'm growing plants.
So you're like at the. Were you, it was
I'm
like
the problem.
Was like the run, like, did you introduce them? Or like, was like,
I mean, they're in like soil. They're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. They've been here. They're going to be here. They're so staying here. But they're exceptionally bad, I guess, in Riverview Park. And allegedly it's because of the deer poop.
Wow.
Because there's so many deer. So it's all connected.
Okay.
And if you don't manage those ecosystems or you're not, you know, we have a lot of spaces that we don't maintain.
Yeah.
That we've acquired by default at the city. If we're not maintaining those spaces, that's when you have this like ecosystem meltdown.
So is the worm thing, like you hear a lot too about like, what is it? Japanese knotweed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there's like two parts of this, right? There's the worm side, the deer side. So like kind of the animal kingdom, right? But then plants too, there's a similar type of challenge, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, Kara, who's our environmental planner.
Kara Smith.
Kara Smith.
Okay.
Recently was showing some pictures of the deer's impact on the understory.
Okay.
So you have the tree canopy layer, and then you have this like undergrowth layer. Yeah. I'm not an ecologist, so I'm probably botching a lot of these terms.
You're the first guest, dude. You have the prerogative.
Yeah, you can say whatever. So you have the tree canopy layer, and then you have this understory layer. Well, you can see the deer browse up to like where the head of a deer would be, right? Okay. So like there's nothing living below that. So it's like deer, worms,
yeah,
poop, and then a tree canopy layer. But really, in a healthy ecosystem, you should have a whole undergrowth
there. So, and that's not there in many cases.
No, it's not there in a lot of cases. So then you have, you know, your ecosystem or your like our parks and our greenways and our hillsides, like they should all be delivering some sort of service. So like stormwater management or, you know, hillside stabilization. But when none of those plants exist, then it's not, you know, it's not doing anything for you.
Wow.
So maintaining a healthy system is really important,
really
especially
important
when, you know, we're facing new climatic changes.
Interesting. Maybe just to transition a little bit, one of the questions I always want to ask folks is, what are you reading? What are you watching? Just kind of personal for me, because I like to pick up new things and see what else is out there. So what are some things that Rebecca Kiernan's reading right now? Any interesting articles or books or?
Well, I'm rereading 1984.
Rereading it.
I kind of feel like everybody should reread 1984.
It's just kind of timely. The audience is nodding. So
yeah, it's a little frightening.
Because?
I think a lot of like the new technology that's coming out, a lot of the, you know, having a phone in your pocket all the time.
Yeah.
Echoes or Alexa or whoever, a lot of that is kind of in the book, and it's sort of like a harbinger of what might come if we don't roll these things out appropriately.
Wow.
Or, you know, scale it back or really think thoughtfully about what we're doing here with surveillance.
Did they ever turn that into a movie?
They did.
The
movie's not that great.
No?
I got it from the so I get all my books and my DVDs from the library.
Okay.
I recommend the library app.
That's
you can.
Is this like a commercial?
Like
if we were to get a sponsor on this show?
I'm allowed to give props to the library.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
It's not like a company.
Yeah.
This
episode's brought to you by the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh.
Yeah. It used to be called Interlibrary Loan, but now, you know, there's an app for that. So you can just request things. So.
So where did 1984 the movie come from? Like what branch?
I don't remember. I've got a whole queue. I don't have internet or Netflix or anything like that at home. I just use the library.
So you're kind of a Luddite.
Which is why I'm like rereading 1984. I'm like, I'm not going to parties anymore after
to get caught up. Yeah. Like, yeah. So that's what you're watching.
What are you watching?
What am I watching?
Or reading or listening to?
Let's see here. So right now, I don't know if it's good parenting or bad parenting. But my oldest, Marley, and I were watching Parks and Rec.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of good.
Fitting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
kind of like take your kid to work.
It's kind of like take your kid to work day type of deal. So that's pretty helpful. That's probably my big watch. I'm also like real into YouTube. Because like by the time I get done with my day, it's like quick snippets of stuff. So that's where I'm getting my news and everything. Which is maybe a half hour later, an hour later, whatever. It's just not live. But kind of like you, I am reading Thank You for Being Late.
What's that?
Which is, I think I'm getting it right. So this is Thomas Friedman's latest book. So it's about kind of the confluence of technology and globalization and, you know, how all these things are affecting kind of our brains and how we work and things are important. It's pretty good.
To check that out.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed The World is Flat, so I figured I'd pick this up. So it was a Christmas gift. It was pretty good. But I do have to bring it up, though. Maybe this is, like, not to be too dour, but you also, like, hooked me up with Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's
a terrifying show.
I mean,
some real challenges with that.
I mean, the storytelling and the acting is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It was also,
and from other things that I've read, it's like a really valid account of exactly who was in the room for what meeting at what time.
I believe it.
What glasses they were wearing.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Like the set design and everything I thought was pretty good. And then I forget the actor's name. He plays the scientist. He was also in Mad Men, which he did a pretty good job until they kind of wrote him off. And then that was it. But I thought that was really good.
The most troubling part, I think, of that whole series was I was thinking the whole time about the parallels of you start out with the Chernobyl incident happens.
Yeah.
And then they expand to that meeting. I haven't watched this in a while, but they pan to that meeting where, you know, the people who are the head of Chernobyl and, you know, some of the government are claiming nothing's going on. And for, you know, a couple episodes, which I think was over the span of a couple of days, there was a lot of just, no, that's not happening.
Like that's
and a lot of denial. And I feel like, you know, there's a lot of parallels to things that are going on right now, too, especially things like climate change.
Right.
You know, some of our environmental issues, a lot of rollbacks, you know, there's just a lot of scary, terrifying parallels, I think.
Have you ever gone onto like Google Earth and like looked at the site?
No.
From above? It's pretty fascinating. I mean, two things that happens is that you start to understand the geopolitics of it. So it's proximity to things, whether it's Kiev or Western Europe. And, you know, I think it was like the Swedes were the first to kind of know, or their, you know, detectors kind of went off or whatever. So like, you know, just how kind of weather works and geopolitics works. And then you look at the actual site and the town it's dystopian. Like it's really kind of a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was a scary watch. And then as a follow-up, I would recommend, there's a new Rolling Stone article that came out recently.
I was going to ask you about that.
Dr. John Stoltz was quoted in there. He's done a lot of the water testing. He's from Duquesne University.
Yeah.
Would also be a fascinating guest.
So, who, Stoltz?
Stoltz. But anyway.
We'd need more than an hour with him.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. The premise of the article is that a lot of the fracking fluid that's now being trucked back and forth through Pennsylvania is radioactive. And so I see a lot of parallels between, you know, the Chernobyl. So I would recommend watch Chernobyl and then read that.
Then
article.
Read the Rolling Stone article.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it justice to explain it. You got to experience
it. You got it. So that's kind of like a little cliffhanger teaser that we can give to folks. Check out Chernobyl, which is on... I think it was at HBO,
I think.
And then Rolling Stone was...
Rolling Stone article. Something about radioactive secret or something.
Was that, January or December, the article?
It was a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Oh, so it's pretty fresh.
It was very recent.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll Late January, maybe.
So we'll have to check that out. So just one maybe final question. What's kind of on your agenda next? What's 2020 going to bring for Rebecca Kiernan? We're early in the year here.
Well, we're doing an adaptation plan.
Okay.
So a lot of those issues that we talked about, you know, deer and flora and fauna.
Right.
And landslides. And I think that there's a better way that we can take all of our properties and our facilities as a system and think about how we better manage them so that they're a good, you know, systemic first line of defense against a changing climate.
Great.
So that's kind of what I'm working on.
You're doing some investigation with that right now. I think we have a class at Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah, I have a really terrific intern named Melanie from Chatham University.
Yeah.
He's doing a lot of research for me. Melanie Areola, looking for a job.
Looking for a job. Soon to graduate.
Terrific.
So for listeners out there, we can get you her contact. She's a terrific intern and would be a great employee. So
a lot of name dropping on this episode.
Well, that's part of what you do on a podcast, I think.
All right.
So with that, hey, this has been a lot of fun. I think whether it's from unicorns to worms to overpopulation of deer to pop culture, I think we've hit a lot in the last 50 plus minutes or so. Rebecca, I sincerely want to thank you for all that you do for the city of Pittsburgh, but probably most importantly, being the chief decorator for the Grant Street Experience and our first guest. Thank you so much for being here and sharing a little bit about the work that you do. So
thank you. This is a real honor.
All right.
A real treat.
Thanks so much. Thanks for being at the Grant Street Experience. We had a great time on this first podcast show. Hopefully you'll like it and give us some great insights on who might be the next guest, and how we can improve, or I don't know that we can improve on our decor here, but how we can make this show better. We're always looking to hear from you out there. So thank you so much. This is Grant Irvin. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.